Jordan Carter, David Ma, and Nate LeBlanc.
Three underground rap nerds walked into a bar. An argument ensued about who the GOATs are. The seed was a thought that would turn into a pod. Now fans worldwide say, not a bad job, the ad hoc cab squad who chronicles the vanguard of hip hop at large. Rap taste slacked off, don't need to be mad, dog. Look no further, it's the dad bod. Rap,
podcasting live from San Jose, California, it is the Dad Bod Rap Pod. I am one third of your host, Damone Carter, aka Dib One. I am joined by Mr. Nate LeBlanc. What's good, man?
I'm good. Do you sometimes find yourself introducing yourself in like business meetings as AKA Dem One? Like, is the rhythm of it so ingrained
never.
That you're just like...
Never. Y'all don't know me like that. Y'all don't know me like that.
Like, you call me Carter, AKA Dem One. Oh, fuck. I meant to ask you for a lot of money.
No. For some reason, the Dem One doesn't have purchase in those spaces. I know. Yeah. It doesn't sway books, right? And then we also have the man, the myth, the legend, David Ma. What's going on, man?
Hey, you guys. Really good to be here. It's been a minute.
Yeah. Reunited, and it feels so good.
I know. The triangle offense is back in action, man. It's good.
We need to go help Steve Kerr out. It's looking a little grim right now for the
just as long as Draymond is healthy for the playoffs, I don't think any of this matters. But yes, it is like really hard to watch.
Now I'm skeptical. I'm like, if Dre could really play and it wasn't that bad, I think he'd be playing. I'm concerned at this point.
Well, don't you think he's taking it easy for the playoffs, right?
If they don't play together for a certain amount of games before the playoffs, Warriors are getting thumped. Like, you gotta have that chemistry. So I'm scared that he's actually hurt. I thought he was more resting hurt.
He's definitely hurt because it's been a long time. He missed like over half the season at this point.
Yeah. So hope that comes together. Shout out to Nate LeBlanc, the Kevon Looney of this podcast. literally has started every game. Also wears a headband that you guys cannot see. So on this week's episode, episode 210, for those of you who are scoring at home, wanted to touch on something that got the Twitter feed and our writer bro universe all in a tither last week, was the purchase of Bandcamp by Epic Games, the people who brought you Dave's favorite game, Fortnite. I made a shit ton of money stealing black people's dances. They've also bought Bandcamp. And I'll be honest with you, Nate. I'm going to turn to you, Nate, as my Wired correspondent here. Why does that strike so much fear in the hearts of so many people? Nothing has changed as of yet, but there's idea that something will happen.
Disclaimer at the top: I know everything about this, intimate deal details, and how the future will unfold. So let's go.
No, I'm Nostradamus.
I don't know. I don't know. But I guess Bandcamp was the people's respite, was people's space away from the exploitive streaming services. So any disruption in that seems to like make people feel like they won't be able to have that home, that place where they feel welcome and that their music has value and they can interact with their fan community. And I don't play video games, but I don't feel like this company has the best reputation in that space. So I think they're kind of like, there's a lot of hesitancy on both sides. I did reach out to a few friends who I consider to be kind of Bandcamp artists. Many of our friends consider themselves like Bandcamp to be kind of their home, and then they'll throw stuff out to streaming or to YouTube or whatever as side things. But Bandcamp is kind of the repository for their work and places where they can get paid. And things ranged from, it's over, fuck me, to, well, let's see how this goes, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah, I kind of don't know what is happening with it, but it doesn't seem good. And the sad thing is, Bandcamp had a really good reputation, and now that is all up in the air. Like, no one knows what's going to happen. So it's like a local thing. They're from Oakland.
Oh, that's right.
I remember us hitting them up when they established their storefront. We're like, hey, can we record a podcast in there? Like, we fucks with Bandcamp. Like Bandcamp's cool.
Big time.
I always try to use Bandcamp links when we post stuff because it just seems like the equitable thing to do. But I don't know. People are very concerned about this.
Dave, is it a bunch of concern for no reason? What happens if Bandcamp goes away, Dave?
I think the concern is real. I mean, I can only speak from it from a two-pronged angle. One is just from a journalistic point of view. I hope the Bandcamp daily component doesn't get fucked with. You know, I really like the articles and the writers. Shout out Andrew Jervis, who is the chief curator. Seems like he allows people to take on interesting projects and really cool articles, and I hope that component does not get touched. And as somebody who is a part owner of a modest small record label, it has always worked great for us. You know, it's the interface is really easy. It's artist friendly. You know, you're allowed to give high quality files, and they only take 10 to 15%. And you know what happens when big bank takes little bank, you know? The big bank, the parent company, is just going to force their will on the small bank. So I'm hoping that 10 to 15% margin does not increase. And so, I mean, sort of to Nate's point, I mean, the jury's still out. I think I don't think all the panic is justifiable yet. But, you know, I'm not an independent artist, you know, and
who depends on that,
right? Exactly.
Right. It's kind of like when OnlyFans got shut down for a couple of days.
What I think is interesting to note, that's an interesting comparison. It didn't actually. It seemed like it was going to. Not that I would know, but
I'm about to say that you
as far as I know, they said they were going to ban explicit content. Everyone was like, "That's what we use it for. Don't do that." And then they didn't do that. Right. That's my understanding of that situation,
right,
which I know very little
about. So Nate's subscriptions were intact, and it seems like it's one of those things where technology has created just a life force for some artists. There are some artists who literally are paying their rent from things that they move through Bandcamp. And so it is definitely scary, the prospect of it going away, but it got me to thinking about what's next? Because even if Epic Games doesn't run into the ground, there's gonna be some other disruptive thing that happens. And I was thinking about this the other day, are we gonna see a reemergence of physicals? Like, are physical formats going to, vinyl is already ridiculous, but are we going to see a turn away from platforms like this that can be kind of, washed away in a second?
Well, let me say this. Making merch, because it's kind of seeming like people can tour again, like we're going to a show tomorrow night, makes a ton of sense. You're not bringing Bandcamp QR codes on tour, right? You need something you can carry with you, the fans can take with them. So in a way that might coincide. Like, if, I mean, the pandemic is far from over, but we're all acting like it is. So
still kicking.
That's a whole separate issue, but I think physical merch and touring are very intertwined, and part of the reason that Bandcamp rose to such prominence, especially among kind of our peer group, was the pandemic and then the implementation of Bandcamp Fridays. That thing where they let people keep 100% of the proceeds on a certain day, and I don't know if you guys saw, but Blueprint and Illogic did a full episode on kind of the exhausting nature of Bandcamp Fridays. That came out last week. Pretty interesting discussion. Both those guys are, you know, serious artists that had careers pre-Bandcamp and just now use it for certain things, and they both got a little burnt on the need to do a sale or have a new product every month. So that's an interesting aspect of the Bandcamp Fridays. But yeah, I think if life is getting back to normal, is Bandcamp as necessary as it was the last 2 years, is kind of an interesting
thing. I see. Because in an era where nobody could go outside, if you wanted anything indie, you had to do that. Shows are coming back. We're going to see what happens with that. But Dave, as a small record label impresario that you are, do you feel like if this were to go away, you guys make physical copies of stuff. Do you think you would be able to compensate, to shift?
It's kind of hard to say. I think with us and a lot of the artists on Bandcamp, speaking, It's all about the tier that you're in. You know what I mean? So if you're like, if you're someone that's like below Mach Hami and can have the capital to press up a bunch of stuff and just keep things physical, it's probably not going to affect you that much. But I would think that the majority of Bandcamp artists are just people directly uploading their music. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not all of them are even touring, you know, but a lot of them have revenue streams through it. I mean, just look at like the beatmaker community alone. It's like none of those guys tour. They all straight up get money from Bandcamp for making their tapes, you know? So, I don't know. If I was an artist who was in that tier, I would definitely be concerned. I mean, it's like, you know, who bought out my boss? You know, what do you do then?
Yeah, exactly. And it makes you feel like, is it going to be like Taylor Swift Bandcamp Friday? Like, are they just going to go towards the most, in the same way that Spotify does, right? And says, we are going to focus on the most popular things on this platform.
Analogy is what happened to SoundCloud. SoundCloud was like the place for independent music. There was no way to monetize. And then it got bought by a bigger company. They introduced ways to monetize. We used to get so many emails from them. Remember when we had the pod on there? Then they started trying to roll things out and it was like, nobody wants this. And
SoundCloud
the whole like idea of SoundCloud rap, just like some of the artists succeeded and some didn't. And now it's actually the best way for promo links. Like I love a private SoundCloud playlist for promo. Like that's by far my preferred method to get it, but I don't ever listen to anything that is released on there, if that makes sense. So it's kind of, that seems like a similar online music space that has cultivated a certain style of artist that got kind of ruined by a buyout. But I was never as fluent in SoundCloud. That just like, I'm not like a YNW Melly guy or whatever, you know. No. It's like,
not a SoundCloud rap expert.
Not a SoundCloud rap expert.
That was the one episode that I really wanted us to do, was just to bring on somebody who really knew what the fuck was going on there and like explain it to us, except that person is 22 years old, younger than us. We can never locate them. So it makes me think about what's next. I've heard like things about this Web3 thing, which I don't fully understand enough to.
Me neither.
I was gonna be like, what's next? Is it NFTs? Is it like, was MC Search onto something?
Oh man, thanks Search. I don't know.
So whack.
it's one of those weird things where like when technology pushes creativity, it's like a mixed bag. You can end up in some really cool places. I think that a lot of artists who otherwise wouldn't be able to get money have been able to get it. But it's always precarious. I'm like, what is the next Napster? What is the next thing that's going to allow us to just steal as much as we want without repercussions? Is that Web3?
Can I bring up one thing which I just feel is germane to this conversation? Weirdly, Bandcamp does not pay any royalty on streaming.
Yeah.
So like of the streaming services, which people can use it like that, it's not super convenient, but you can, it pays actually the lowest rate. It doesn't even pay like 3 farthings or whatever.
Yeah.
Spotify plays, it pays nothing because they're more previewing music is how they see it for you to then buy downloads or buy physicals. So it was reminding me, I was thinking about this earlier today, one of the last big changes that happened at the record store where I worked before I got a real job was they introduced the red dot. Do you guys remember those?
The red dot?
Totally. They were little physical kiosks where you could scan a CD.
Oh, yes.
Preview of it.
Yes.
And now when I, you know, go to visit my buddy at the old record store where I used to work, there's all these like wires and stuff like hanging out where they had to take those out. Like that was like the last gasp of the like Blockbuster music ideal.
Oh, that's
previewing before you bought and previewing as a way to get people to buy more. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I remember when they were trying to sell us on this as like a staff, they're like, we're going to do all the work. We'll install it all. This is going to lead to people buying more music. And I was like, what it leads to is a lot of annoying questions that can be answered by the red thing, but not me. You know what I mean?
Pretty much. And it's one of those things where the music industry totally changed at that time. Like it just totally, and technology totally changed it. It will change again. But music will be all right, right, Dave? We'll there'll still be struggle rap.
Of course, always. I mean, if like a huge section of these artists are concerned, then that does give me concern, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 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 it's going to be some type of disruption, but I think always there'll be some landing place for it, right? Because your want to connect with those artists does not go away just because the platform is shitty now. But it'll be interesting to see like what moves into that void for that specific tier of artists. I think you make a great point. And when we were talking to Open Mike Eagle in Idaho, which is always funny to say, he was talking about how, you know, getting a little bit behind the curtain, the streaming companies only want to fuck with the absolute biggest thing. It's the only thing that works at scale. And so in a weird way, I'm hopeful. I know Bandcamp kind of took up some of that space. Like people who would not be super lucrative on Spotify could make some money on Bandcamp. Mm-hmm. And probably Bandcamp was making some money. But I'm wondering what will be the next thing. Did Bandcamp Fridays, did they ruin the thing? Did they give away the store? Did investors get like, what's going on? Let's cash out.
I hope not. I think if anything, it gave them a better sense of integrity. I think like I said, us as the record label are huge on that. And also just hearing so many artists voice their support for it makes me feel like it's legit, you know? So it does feel like the rug is being pulled underneath.
I will say like, there's been like this, I think it was last Friday and it kind of went by unnoticed. Like one, that wasn't the main Bandcamp news that was out, and two, February goes by so fast. I was like, we're doing this again.
Yep.
Right, I had just bought Small Professor's new beat tape, the Temporal Pincer Movement, where he does all the beats like backwards and forwards. Very fascinating project. Ew. Very fascinating to hear him talk about all that. So I wanted to, you know, he's given us a lot over the years. I wanted to buy it and support it. And I part of me was like, I had a really busy day at work that day and after work. And I was like, I should have bought it today. He would have gotten
100%.
Yeah, exactly. $4 or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Just a weird thing to think. But yeah, I don't know. We really will have to wait and see. But I'm kind of wondering in which scenario can this be good?
Yeah, exactly. Probably in the short term, none, right? Because like Epic Games doesn't buy it to like make sure that your favorite indie band
to keep it the same.
Right? Yeah. They're gonna do something with it. It's gonna be hideous, and then we'll have to move on to something else. That's my doomsday.
Damon, I have a quick question for you. Are there Dem 1 CDs on Bandcamp? Like, can people go get the new math and like your last couple projects? Like, do you ever ship out CDs from there? Like, are people?
Mm-mm. No, I was on Bandcamp. I've been on Bandcamp for probably 6 or 7 years. Okay. before it was popular, but no. But also, I don't put a lot into that. And also, I got like 12 CDs left. So more what I get is a random dude from like Paraguay being like, I love this. Send me this thing, and I'll send you $12. And I go, I can't do that for $12.
Yeah,
but let's circle back.
You should put them up there for like 100 each. You're a big podcaster now,
big time. No, it's not the worst idea. And my goal for this year was actually to have new material on a Bandcamp Friday. Even Bandcamp Friday got me out of fucking cobwebs. Like, oh, this is what we doing? Yeah. I could have a thing, but I'm still not there yet. So working on it. Hopefully there will still be a Bandcamp, or you might catch me on Fortnite Fridays, whatever Epic says.
Is part of what they could be doing, like making it easier for people to, I'm just going to sound so dumb here. Just go with me. Isn't doing a Fortnite character all about like customizing your thing? Is this about like putting a song on your MySpace, for lack of a better understanding of how this works? Like, does it make the music that's on Bandcamp like licensable and usable within the game? Because you know how people like Travis Scott will have a concert in Fortnite, so like potentially could, sorry to single a person out, but it was just the first artist I thought of, shout out Premrock, have a concert in Fortnite now? You know what
Damn,
I mean?
Damn, imagine the Curly Castro character.
I don't know how it works. I don't know. That maybe it's maybe it could happen. I have no idea, but
Nate has joined the development team for Epic Games slash Bandcamp. So
I have very high consultation fees, but I'm worth it.
It's like I'm workable. It'll be interesting. I do think that there is gonna be some type of thing with the fact you can put like anything on Bandcamp. It's not, things don't get taken down in the same way that they do on other platforms. Right. And I think that's one of the first things you're going to see to go away. Because to your point, Nate, I think they are going to want to move to like, we want to be able to license this. We want to be able to get more value out of it. As if I'm thinking with like corporate dickhead brain, they're going to want to maximize the value of this fucking asset that they bought. And like, that's not every, you know, that's not uncleared beat tapes. Right. I think it'll probably move in the other direction, which is kind of sad. Is YouTube going to be the last place that you can like low key get away with, rampant sample thievery? Dave, you're a YouTube guy. No, I'm just
I hope so. I know I am a YouTube guy. I love YouTube, man.
Yeah.
That's the only place where you can like search some obscure ass shit and some random dude uploaded it. It's the best shit. Yeah,
that's when you found something truly rare. It won't be on YouTube, right?
Totally, exactly. I don't know. I mean, hopefully
you're the person who could put it on YouTube if you so chose to be that guy.
Totally. Yeah. Hopefully, with this Bandcamp thing, it leaves a vacuum for something, maybe like a return to form. You know, now that we know what works, maybe someone else will take it over. Not take it over, but
do something,
a new venture. Similar. Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Totally. Yeah, I feel like we got to go back to the trunk. Everybody got to be ready to go back to the trunk if that's what it takes. I always remember this thing of like the American star system for music fucked everybody up. There was a time when being a musician didn't necessarily equate with like, that could be your life. Like Robert Johnson did not make a life out of music, even though his music made a life for a lot of other people.
Right.
So it's kind of like, you know, there is some entitlement that I think that we have that like, oh, you're supposed to make all this money making music. I think people will make music whether there's a money incentive or not. I'd love to see people compensated fairly for it, but I think the margins are going to keep getting smaller and smaller on what you can make. And so with that in mind, stay tuned for a Dad Bod t-shirt. Because y'all buy t-shirts and tote bags before music. But anyway, speaking of indie artists and people who probably do have eaten somewhat on Bandcamp, we have a dope artist interview lined up for y'all. A person who's been doing this for many moons. I'm pissed I did not get to ask him about Makeshift Patriot. Somehow this whole interview, I'm just, that spoiler alert, Damone dropped the ball. I wasn't able to ask him about it, but we talked to Sage Francis. He was super open, talked about all the new projects that he's got coming up and kind of his career and being a dad and a whole bunch of other cool things. So let's cut to it right now. This is our interview with Sage Francis, Dad Bod Rap Pod. Dad Bod Rap Pod, every week we talk to people who have moved and shaped hip-hop culture. This week is no different. Joining us in Zoom, we have Sage Francis. What's happening, man?
Chilling. Living that cold New England life right now.
Yeah. So where are you at?
Currently in Connecticut. Next to the casinos that everyone used to have to travel to. But a lot of places have gambling now. So, yeah, it's just really the part between Boston and New York that people have to drive through.
Okay. It's weird for us as Californians, because like there's like 500 miles between every city.
Yeah.
So we don't, it's hard for us. But how cold is it? Like, just give us a,
I mean, it gets down in like the single digits, or maybe like when the wind blows, it's below zero.
No, sir.
But what's really crazy about where we live is in New England is it'll tease you. Like it'll be freezing one day and then the next day is 60 degrees. So you're like, oh damn, spring's here, but like, nah, fake spring, son. And then it's nice. Like back to winter again. It really kind of just fucks with your emotions. And that's kind of why we are the way we are, I think.
That was going to be my next question. So do you feel like, cause I do believe in cold weather rap. I believe where you're from influences your kind of approach to how you put your bars together. Do you think there's a New England-ness to your approach?
Yeah, I think so. Or East Coast, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, you're forced to hunker down and cuddle up with a pen and pad, or used to be anyways. It's different these days. But I mean, just feeling that shiver and the cold in your bones and having to like focus in on what you're doing, and really that's all you have to occupy you and try to like get shit like on fire, man. What's funny about California, I mean, I've spent a lot of time there.
Sure.
And there's been tours where I'm all by myself and I totally forget how far away certain cities are. Mm-hmm. I should have taken plane rides to a different city, but I'm like, I got a rental car, I'll just drive there the next day and it'll be a 12-hour drive.
Hell yeah.
And I never learned my lesson ever. But I love California, man. I really miss it, especially now.
Yes, sir. We were talking to Nappy Nina, and her approach is to live in Brooklyn in the summer and then come back to the Bay Area for the non-winter months.
It's still kind of gross in the summer though, because then you get like bad humidity. Like New York, yes, in the summer is gross. So there's really only a couple sweet spots, like a couple weeks in the fall and a couple weeks in the spring. But
that's our Dad Bod Rap Pod weather report. That's how we like to start interviews.
Oh man, well, you know, Sage, you know, just off top, I mean, indie rap legend in the house, so thank you. And you know, anyone who's an indie rapper is also, you know, an independent business person. So you know, with you, with Strange Famous through the years, I mean, you put out some great stuff. But I just wanted to give you a second to sort of bring up the project with Cubby Bear and C's Mics. Even in Death is the album. And, you know, I just wanted to unpack that a little bit, if you don't mind, giving people the backstory, because I think it's really important to, you know, understanding the music and, you know, it's a upcoming thing you guys are putting out.
Yeah, I mean, the Cubby Bear and C's Mike's album, Even in Death, is one of a slew of albums that suddenly we had in our mix to release after seemingly being on a hiatus for a couple of years once the pandemic hit. But I've known C's Mike's and Cubby Bear for a long time. Cubby Bear passed away of brain cancer in 2017. We weren't even in talks about releasing this album, and I didn't even know about it until C's Mike's hit me up and said, yo, we were able to access these files that for songs we've been compiling over the past decade. And once Cubby Bear was diagnosed and he was given about 6 months to live at most, he took some time to finalize his verses for this project, and he produced the whole thing. He did the beats, but everything was not finalized. And once we were able to access those files, thanks to a few close friends of his and his brother, our dude, Alexander Brown from Baltimore, was able to build around the beats, actually like give it more volume and depth with bass. Like he played bass on a few of the tracks and just added extra percussion to give it that more full body sound. But we were working with, you know, one of them's just a straight up MP3. There was nothing we could do about it. There was no stems or anything. So yeah, we were working with what was left and what we could play with. And I was more than happy to put it out for them. And I know there's like diehard fans of Cubby Bear who never really thought they'd hear anything from him again. So it was a big surprise once we were able to present this to people, and they're like, wow, like new Cubby Bear verses. This is insane. So that was good. And I hope for his family and his friends, it helped reach some type of closure, because I know he was a big fan of mine. And, you know, Strange Famous, you know, he always worked with our artists and would do shows with us. And for us to finally put out an album that he's featured on, or like a big part of, I think is a pretty big deal for those who know him. And so that was released not too long ago. That we'll have another video for very soon, which I'm the only reason the video's held up is because of me. I'm supposed to be in it and I don't really know how to film myself in my situation. You know, I should have had it done already. Yeah. But yeah, so that's, these are the kind of things that we deal with on this indie level, where it's like we're doing so many things by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we're very lucky to have the support of a fan base that continues to grow over the decades, mostly through word of mouth, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that.
Right on, man. I mean, you know, rest in peace, Cubby Bear. Can you let us know just how you guys even just first linked up?
I believe the first time I linked up with Cubby Bear was during the MySpace days, where you could make your own, you know, the HTML stuff. You do your banners and I had a mixtape coming out, and he was like, "Yo, you want me to design a header for you?" And I was like, "Yeah, man." It's like, I didn't have any idea how to do that stuff. So he just like straight up out of nowhere put together a really cool design that I could put on my MySpace page as advertisement for this mixtape. And it was for nothing. Like, he wasn't asking for anything in return. He just was like a cool dude like that. He was multifaceted, multi-talented. And then I think C's Mikes introduced me to him in person at one of my shows backstage when I was playing in DC. And then we just stayed in touch since then. So we were, I knew that he was in rough shape, but some part of me always thought he was going to make it through, cause he was so vibrant. Mm. And, so I always like let him know, hey, I was like, no need to rush right now. But I was like, I got some stuff I think we could do together. And I know he was excited about that, but he was straight up with me. He just was like, man, I mean, I can hardly speak right now. I can't record these verses. Mm. You know, it was all through email. So he just was like, I'll let you know when I can get around to it. But that just, you know, that kind of stung, because I knew at that point, it just was like, I knew how much he wanted it, but he couldn't do it. So, yeah.
Wow.
That's how it went down. But our last show together was in DC at a cool spot at the, I forget what it's called. I think it was Metro Gallery, and he killed it. We had a great time. C's Mikes was also on that show, so it was great that we all got to do the show together, and now we put out that project on Strange Famous Records.
Dope, man.
That's dope. Thanks for kind of sharing the backstory there. Do you feel any like pressure, or do you get concerned about a posthumous project, and kind of like there's a thin line between kind of honoring somebody's work, right, and then like the kind of profiteering stuff we've seen with a lot of rappers. How do you walk that line?
It's easy for me to walk, because we don't make much profit.
Broken honest, I love it.
Yeah, so it's not like it's a cash grab or anything like that. And it's not like when old Dirty Bastard died and they grabbed like scrap verses and threw together some real horrible project just to cash off on his name.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is make more people aware of what he is as an artist, who he is as a person. And hopefully more people discover his previous work, but before the Even in Death album. So, I mean, it really didn't even cross my mind too much, other because I already had the family's blessings.
Okay. Okay.
And that was enough for me, you know, as long as, you know, his girlfriend and his family were on board, that's all I needed to care about.
Absolutely. So you talked a little bit about Strange Famous kind of being on a little bit of a hiatus. Is that like kind of like pandemic induced or?
Sort of, because we were driven a lot by touring. So once the touring stopped, we were a little confused as to how we were going to build promo campaigns around album releases. Mm-hmm. And when I record albums, it's usually with the whole campaign in mind about when I need to get it done, at what point do I need to start booking a tour, who I'm going to put on that tour, what they need to have. So all of that is out the window now.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm not even sure if the pandemic plays a part in that, because my whole life flipped upside down right around when the pandemic hit anyways, because I had just gotten married, my wife just got pregnant, and I am feeling like, yes, that is how I make my money. However, I've done it long enough and I know what it takes away from in my personal life, and I probably should not be risking that in this circumstance. So a part of me feels like I wouldn't be touring anyways, although there was one major tour planned that I had to scrap. and I lost money on that because I had already bought the plane tickets and hotel rooms and all of that.
Oh man, wow.
So yeah, so a lot of energy and time preparation just went into the trash can, and I think I needed that for me to feel content. Like, even though I had lost that time, energy, and money, I still felt good about what it resulted in, and I could move on with my life. So yeah. The hiatus was about, people were just sitting on material. And then after the pandemic hit and they were at home for so long, they built up a lot of projects. I started putting artists in touch with one another, rappers with producers, with DJs, and we started mixing and matching styles that I thought would be interesting, and people who never knew each other before really hit it off. So nice. Mopes, who used to be, you know, called Prolific, I hooked them up with Black Lick from Virginia. They put together a project, and then he started working on other stuff. Alexander Brown, again, like we threw a bunch of Strange Famous Rappers onto his project. Buddy Peace from London did all the cuts throughout that project. And it was like, wow, this stuff I always wanted to do, but it always seemed impossible to get all these people on the same page, but we're all sitting at home now. So there was a way to connect the dots and get everyone interested. And just as long as they had a home studio, it was possible. And no, we're not making a lot of money off of it. It's not profit driven. And I think this is really cliche, but there's the magic there. The fact that we get to go back to square one, what inspired us from when we started off, we never expected to make money. It was about the creativity. It was about how we could build off one another and make something that, you know, we're super proud of. And there's no single in mind. There's no tour in mind. There's no video in mind. It's just like, how dope can we make these songs? And now there's a heap of them. There's just way more than I ever expected. And it could overwhelm the listeners if you know people would be like, damn, this new album's out, we just had another album last week because that just happened,
right?
You know, but you know, I don't know what to say. We're not trying to, like, I'm not being incredibly business minded about it. I'm really just trying to facilitate this and allow the music to be available to the people.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've been talking a minute about Strange Famous, but doing the independent stuff, but you know, you were at one point on Epitaph and also Lex, I believe, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that Lex album, the Nonprofits Hope album, one of my favorite projects by you, and of course Joey Beats on the production tip. But I bring that up to bring up Doomage, the remix track with Slug and Brother Ali, which was produced by MF Doom. That's a long way of me just trying to get you to talk about MF Doom and sort of like how he struck you as a rapper, as an artist, and tell us how that track came about, if you don't mind.
All right. Well, I was a huge fan of MF Doom since the KMD days. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved Mr. Hood, the album Mr. Hood.
Yep.
And then when the reinvention happened on Fondulum, and we was doing stuff with Bobito and Stretch, that was one of the last times I felt like someone really inspired me as an MC to try out new stuff, because it was so raw. And here I was in a situation where I couldn't really get good studio time. No one was giving me beats, you know. It's like back in those times, it just was not as prevalent as it is now. So I was a huge MF Doom fan. And when we did the Nonprofits album, and then there was the, I think MF Doom started doing stuff with Danger Mouse.
Yep.
So Danger Doom stuff. And that was through Lex. And Lex had some kind of, he was under, like, contractually, something was going on. I don't know. I don't want to speak on that.
Yeah.
But he said, listen, we can get a MF Doom feature for a remix for Damage. You know, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. That's cool. And then I learned after the fact that we could have either gotten a beat or we could have gotten a verse. and we ended up with the beat, and we paid for that. It was the only time I've ever paid for a feature in my whole life. I didn't personally pay for it. The label did, but it comes out of our pockets, you know? And I was like, damn, I would, I mean, I love his production, but I want.
Dude, they have that verse.
Yeah, I want that verse. What the fuck? We already have the producer. I want the verse. It's still like, sometimes I wake up at night, like sweating.
So, seriously.
That's how that went down. I felt a little out of the loop, but, and I was super busy during those days. So I can't even remember exactly. I do remember, we were sending each other burned CDRs through the mail in order to
nice
thing. Wow. Done. So like Ali and Slug would send me their stuff and I'd bring it to the studio and then I did my stuff. And in retrospect, they were like, they didn't think I was going to go punchline rap on it. Cause I had like a reputation for doing more introverted or introspective stuff. And they ended up doing introspective verses. And then I came out on the third verse with just punchline rap. And it's like, we're like, you know, we're telling really personal stuff on our verses. And then you're just talking shit.
That's dope. Yeah, that's like, dope. That I think that's in line with the spirit of MF Doom of whatever you thought you were going to get, you're getting a curveball.
Yeah.
Want to take it back a little bit. You have your roots in battle rap and kind of the scribble jam world. And you're one of a couple of guys that was able to kind of make a transition out of, you know, like you say, being like more of a punchline-y guy into doing deeper stuff. But I wonder how much of that still kind of lives in you, that battle rap ethos, and how was it trying to make that transition? Was that like a conscious thing or did it just kind of happen?
It wasn't difficult for me during the scribble jam time, because at that point I really had already started the transition away from battle rap. I had cut my teeth in the battle scene in Boston and Rhode Island, and I honestly was kind of out of the game. But then when the concept of a scribble jam came up and people I knew were like, yo, you got to go to this, cause like it's huge and people, you know, it's very exciting. And I was like, yeah, I want to check that out. I didn't go in there with any thought of like, I'm going to take this shit over.
Right.
But when I got there and I kind of played a game. I was like the Zalzan character. I wanted to embody the stereotypical heavy metal white kid. Cause every time a white kid would battle back in the day, it was like, that's what people would say about you. Yeah. So I just wanted to own it right off the bat and then be like, what else do you have? Cause I'm already owning up to the heavy metal skateboarder bullshit. Can you go beyond that? Cause if you mention it, it looks super obvious and dumb. Right. So I squeaked by in that 2000 scribble jam, and though that format, it just was so crazy. It was 100 MCs in the battle, literally, you know, and it went all night long. By the end, no one gave a fuck. People, you know, the place had just like filtered out. So, but I did, I mean, it was important for people to learn about who Sage Francis is. Cause my name was then in a bunch of publications.
Yep.
At the time, Napster was huge. So if people saw my name and say like, who the hell is this dude who won scribble jams, then they would type it in Napster and then they had whatever 12 inches or you know material I had available, and that helped me gain notoriety throughout the world. I was able to do shows anywhere I wanted from there on out, thankfully, because the music was good enough, you know. And I think I heard you guys talk about this in previous episodes, but battle rappers have a very difficult time transitioning from battle rap mentality to songwriting mentality. You have to switch gears. It's a whole different type of thinking. It's a whole type of approach. And I think battle rappers almost always get stuck in that box. And I was very scared about that. So
yeah,
I could have followed up Scribble Jam with the Nonprofits album, which is a lot of punchline rap and it's very hip hop centric. But I felt like doing a personal journals, flipping the script and making people step back a bit. Like, damn, I thought, you know, like, what's up with this? He sounded like a pussy, like, you know, like, help them get over that mentality. Like, they're like, what's really happening with this cat? And then and hit them with the nonprofit stuff. I'm like, oh, okay. He still got that other stuff, but you know, he's just coming from different angles. That was important for me back then.
Yeah.
It was a gamble. Honestly, it was a big gamble. So I worked with Anticon Records first. They had a reputation that wasn't great in a lot of territories. But they had a name they had infrastructure and they had backing that I didn't have. And then once Personal Journals kind of, it just sold like crazy, I then did. But we had already signed to Lex, which was unfortunate. I really, you know, it's one of my worst business decisions. After that, signing to Epitaph, which really raised my recognition level, but you tied me into three albums, and all of that was just during a time that was so busy and crazy. There was no one else, no one could have like sat me down and been like, yo, here's what you really should do. I really just had to play everything by the seat of my pants and, you know, fly by the seat of my pants and trust my gut everywhere I went. Sometimes I was wrong, but a lot of times I was right. So it all worked out well in the end. I'm really not tripping about it, but
do you still carry it though? Do you still carry some of that battle rapness? I mean, even in your talking, I can be like, he seems like he'll break on you in the right situation.
I restrain it. I restrain it often. I mean, as a father.
Yeah, exactly. That was my next question.
I'm a father. You know, I look after young girls, and like, I don't want to say that one thing they carry with them for the rest of their life, but I do want to kind of roast people sometimes. So, I exercise incredible restraint. It's a gift now. It's something, it's a muscle I had to develop to take over the other muscles.
That's great.
When I get into it with people sometimes, and I think I have a knack for saying that one thing that sticks to people. Like, I'm not going to hit you with a barrage of lines, but I will hit you with one line that people are going to remember for the rest of your life. And whenever you get brought up, is like, that's why people don't want to battle me. It's not because I'm the illest freestyler. I have that one thing though. It's an X factor thing. I'm going to say that one thing at the exact right time, and you're not going to know how to react to it. That's it. That's what helped me win battles. And that was kind of the shit talking background I came from, that you pick your spot.
That's what's up.
I'm going to have to pick my spot with the kids at some point, you know, like they're going to really, they're going to get fresh at some point. And I'm going to just be like, all right, well, here's what I've been thinking for 10 years.
I've had this one in a tuck since you were 4 years old. Oh, that is hilarious. Since we're on the Dad Bod Rap Pod, how many kids do you have? What does the Sage Francis daycare look like?
Well, they get a 7-year-old. Well, she's about to turn 8. But a 7-year-old girl, 5-year-old girl, and a 1-year-old boy.
Okay.
The two girls are my stepdaughters, but the boys, like, I had with my wife. Mm-hmm. And I've been raising them since they were toddlers. It's been a few years now where and with the pandemic, us being in the same house 24 hours, 7 days a week, it's, you know, it's been a lot, but it's a blessing, man. As different and nothing I ever expected in my life. It's, if you know my music, you know that this is something that I've kind of rallied against in my lyrics and in my spirit, you know, and is not something I strive towards. So I won't ever say like, I was really looking for this. I'm so glad I got it.
But yeah.
It blindsided me. And my wife is just the most incredible person and made the rest of this life make sense for me.
Yeah.
So I also wouldn't like push it on other people. Like, yo, you don't have kids,
you're
married yet? Go do that.
No.
Like, I know what both lives are, you know, I know the benefits, the pros and cons of both sides, but yeah, that's my life now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Awesome.
Wow.
That's
Thanks awesome. For sharing that, man. I mean, you know, we've touched a lot on, your career in general. We talked about Personal Journals and then sort of the Epitaph years and all that, but we've also talked about the Strange Famous stuff that you know, have been putting together, but what about a solo Sage project? I mean, what are your thoughts on that? And just, you know, can you unpack that a little bit? Like what can people expect?
I've always got Sage Francis solo material in the works. So after Copper Gone, which was my last solo release, I started doing the Epic Beard Men projects with B. Dolan. Mm-hmm. And that took a lot of time and energy, and we toured a lot. And of course, during that time, I'm still writing Sage Francis stuff that wouldn't work with the Epic Beard Men project. I've got maybe two or three different Sage projects that are floating in my brain, some demos I've recorded. But once I moved from Rhode Island to Connecticut, and man, I like my whole home studio situation became an issue, which I figured out recently. So I was able to record some stuff for the Alexander Brown Glow Kid project. But it's not so easy for me to do this the way that I've always known how to do it. So I'm still waiting for a window of opportunity where I can have my space and my meditation time and really delve into the concepts and ideas and writing the way that I prefer. So I'm not rushing it. Like, I could write an album in a week. That's not a problem for me. But will it be a Sage Francis, like what people expect from a Sage Francis album? That's what scares me. So I'm chilling on that. And I also need to watch the way that I talk now. Not saying I won't swear, but I can't be as fancy free and I can't be a loose cannon the way I was in the personal journals days. That was a part of my life and I'm glad that I did it, but I can't be that now. So how can I do what I know how to do in the best way possible and not fuck with my life?
Cause you're a grown ass man.
I feel like I've been a grown ass man since I was 14, but it's a whole different grown ass man now. And it's not anyone's issue. It's no one else's fault. It's no one should be like, oh man, I should give him more free. It's not about me not being free. It's really, it's beyond what I can explain, honestly. I have to be very careful about certain subjects.
Yeah, so, well, you got to live, you have to live with these lyrics in a way that I don't think I think back in the day, you didn't have to be as accountable. Cats could say wild, outlandish shit because that's just kind of part of what you did, right? Like you listen to an album from the 90s or early 2000s and you're like, ooh, that would be tough nowadays. But now you got to live by it, man. People will come for you. And I'm not complaining about that.
It's your spirit too. When you're in your young 20s, early 20s, it's a spirit. It's like a dumb spirit. It's good. And it's good to exercise that dumbness. And hip hop, I find, is a wonderful platform for that to thrive and have fun with. But when you're a 45-year-old dude with a family and kids, when those certain things come out of your mouth, it really, like, context matters. It just doesn't slap the way it used to, you know. It makes you feel a little weird. But it's not just about that. Like, I'm not ever really writing dumb stuff. Like, if I do, it just kind of like falls to the column of my notebook. But personal matters is and how it affects my family and what I talk about, I want to be entertaining. You know, like I want to entertain, but I don't want to hurt.
because it's a bad look. I mean, not to name names, but Eminem is talking about the same shit he was talking about when he was like 22.
Saying that in 2002. Like, yeah, honestly, yeah. Like, it's insane. It's insane. So I mean, that was I thought that back then, but just to see how it all played out, and like people still ate it up for so long, and I'm just like holding my head like, what the fuck is wrong with people? Like, he's saying the same shit and it's not interesting, you know. Like, okay, he can like connect a lot of fancy syllables, but it's like, what the hell is he saying? I'm glad that he turned a new leaf, though. I think personally he turned things around for himself, and that's good because he was going, you know, down
in a bad direction. For sure. But unfortunately, at that level, when you get into a shtick, you kind of have to see it through. I'm glad you're kind of adapting and growing into a new form of Sage Francis. As we kind of turn the corner here, what can we expect from you and Strange Famous in the next couple quarters here?
Well, this year we had a bunch of projects ready to go, so we've been trying to sprinkle them from month to month, and we have new projects, new artists. A lot of people probably don't even really know that much about. So we have this dude, Jesse the Tree, from Providence. And I didn't sign him because he's from Providence, but I did meet him in Germany. The first time I ever met that cat was at a festival in Germany. And he caught my ear and I was like, damn, like this cat like has a voice. He has a swag about him that is very natural. Nothing is forced about him. And he also is not He's the type of artist who doesn't know how to promote himself. Yeah. So that's why, like, he's not interested in that side of the business. So we got a lot on our plate in order to make these people available and make people interested in them, because they're not really trying to push themselves. And that's okay. I feel like that's where we are as an indie label, where we can take on these type of artists who are incredible, but they're not trying to live off the music. They really just want to have, you know, their material, you know, made as good as it can be and then made available to the public. So we got that cat. We got Mopes just released his solo album called Unwound, which I love, like absolutely adore that album. I love what he's doing as a producer and as an MC. I know he's working on a new project with Black Lick. We got a group called Jive and Scientists from Tucson, Arizona, who have been going through a lot of personal stuff. Like, their project has been done for a while, but I feel like they're waiting for the perfect time to release it. But that will come out at some point this year. There's a ton of different stuff. I know I'm going to skip over something important, but Strange Famous Records, we will always, you know, we're pushing the projects. And if people could follow us and not get disturbed by promotion, I promise that you're going to like feel rewarded in some way, and often.
That's what's up. Well, Sage Francis, we appreciate you coming on, spending some time with us, and just continued success, man. You are a legend in these parts.
Thank you. Keep doing what you guys do. I really appreciate the show. I like that you nerd out on hip hop, and I fear that we don't have many years of this type of podcast to exist. Like, I don't think people of your sort really, I don't think up and comers can be like you. Like, we're our background, our type of background, the stuff that we know, it's very unique what you guys do. So props for that. And thank you again, man.
Thank you, man.
Thank you so much.
Have a good one. Right. That was our interview with Sage Francis. Just the dad thinking of lyrical burns all day. That's kind of what I was getting at with the question, is like, do you just go around in your head thinking of sick burns on people? Like, even the guy at the bank, like how you would, I know I've done that before. Like, if we got into a battle, this is what I would say about you, person at Mary West.
It's really cool to see his growth. I mean, not just as an artist, but just as a person, you know what I mean? Like, I've listened to his early stuff, and they were about girlfriends and breakups, and now hopefully, you know, his new stuff's like about his family, you know? So it's really cool, man. And you know, Sage, indie rap legend, it's really great to just, you know, have a moment of his time. I mean, he was as thoughtful and as funny as he is on record, you know?
Absolutely. Super, super sharp mind. We appreciate him coming on. Stay tuned for all the releases coming out on Strange Famous Records that he talked about. You know who we are. It's the freaking Dad Bod Rap Pod. We need y'all to go sign up for this Patreon. I feel like the people who are on our Patreon right now are like the underground fans who will be talking about this for years to come, how they were on the ground level when Dave was still sending out stuff and Nate was doing Fly Sporadic. Don't be a late adapter. Come to our Patreon. We had a pretty robust response to the last record review that me and Nate did on Alchemist and Currency's Continuance. A lot of interesting back and forth there. Nate, it appears that Patreon says that we're both wrong. That you're wrong for not liking Currency, and I'm wrong for thinking this is a good record. And that's why I love Patreon.
Yeah, I mean, they're not wrong either, because it's all opinions, right?
You guys are both right.
There it is. It's like math. It counts. If we have two bad takes, equal one good one. But yeah, we appreciate everybody on Patreon kind of chiming in. It's livelier when you do. We'll do another record review this week. I'm not quite sure what it is. I'll look for the most polarizing one I can find.
Can I pitch something?
Sure.
Cities of Eve.
Okay. But have you heard it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's like 40-something tracks almost, is it? It's a lot.
What are you doing?
I listen to it. We can definitely talk about that.
That's one topic to discuss. The other one, you know, the music.
Yeah. And all of it.
Don't feel like you have to. I don't know if I'm actually around at the time where we're doing that this week. I have a very busy week with family stuff, but you know.
Okay.
I would like us to talk about that at some point because it's an interesting record.
Yeah, you hipped me to Cities of Eve around the time that we interviewed Luca. And I went to the record with the curiosity. I'm still curious. It's kind of a fascinating sound that he's putting together there. So we will take it under consideration at the weekly record reviews, trying to turn out weekly record reviews only for the Patreon homies. Subscribe now, patreon.com/deadbodrappod. $5 a month. Or 4 pounds, or five, or 7 NKE.
Or if we see you in real life, we'll give you 3 pounds.
Kind of elbow bumps, though.
Yeah, it's a good release Friday. Tana Talk 4 is coming out on Friday.
Mm.
Is Push coming out too?
I don't know. I haven't seen people saying that, but
okay,
yeah.
All right. Tana Talk 4 coming out. We might delve into that. Will Benny make a comeback? I know we've been a little bit snooze cruise on his last couple releases, but we shall see.
Like, by calling it a Tana Talk, it makes it a bigger event, right? And then it's mostly Alchemist Productions, supposedly, with a little bit of Hit Boy and some other dude, some Derringer. So we'll see.
Now that we're in our umpteenth season of Dad Bod Rap Pod, you can expect a first quarter recap coming soon at the end of this month. So, you know, you can find us on Patreon. You can find us on Twitter at DadBodRapPod. You can find us on Instagram at DadBodRapPod. We do episodes every damn Thursday. You know what it is, DadBodRapPod.
Thought. Might as well have been a dream, he thought.